Wisconsin's rural counties played a big role in Donald Trump's victory here in the state. 18 rural counties that went for Barack Obama 4 years ago went for Donald Trump this time around. Craig Gilbert of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel says Trump's strong turnout in rural Wisconsin made up for a relatively soft performance in Republican strongholds in the Milwaukee suburbs.
That's part of the story behind the differences between polls and election outcomes. But what made those counties go from Obama to Trump? Our next guest has been studying the urban-rural divide in Wisconsin for years now. She goes beyond the polls and actually talks to people in different parts of the state. She says feelings of resentment in rural and small-town Wisconsin helped fuel support for Donald Trump.
Kathy Kramer joins us now. She's director of the Morgridge Center for Public Service and professor of political science at UW-Madison. She's the author of The Politics of Resentment, Rural Consciousness in Wisconsin and the Rise of Scott Walker. Kathy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I saw you quoted, I think, in the Washington Post talking about people who had voted for Barack Obama and voted for Donald Trump, and in some cases in rural Wisconsin, they did it for the same reason. They were looking for a change agent.
Yeah, absolutely. So when Barack Obama came on the scene 2008, people thought that maybe this was a different kind of politician. You know, in the years that I've been spending with folks since about that time and until now, a lot of what I hear in our smaller communities is people just feeling like whatever the system is currently is not working for them and really wanting something significantly different, which is what Donald Trump said he would deliver.
And you see a big disconnect between the way people think, talk about politics and talk about each other, in particular when you look at urban Wisconsin and in Madison versus the rural parts of the state. Can you give a brief overview what each side of that divide is saying about the other?
Yeah, sure. Well, in some ways, there's more similarities than not. So in all parts of the state, I heard people saying that they felt like both parties didn't pay attention to people like them, and they were not happy with politics as usual. But what really interested me in the rural parts of the state was the sense that their sense of being overlooked was so tied to their identity as folks from a small community. Their sense that all the attention goes to the cities, the resources go to the cities, and so their sense of kind of injustice or being left out was really tied to their residential location.
Let's talk about each of those things you just mentioned: resources and attention. Let's start with resources. You've tried to track, you know, how much actual money goes that comes in from taxpayers via the state to rural versus urban communities. Is there a big difference?
Well, no, there's not. So this is, you know, I want to be careful about how I say this, because when you look at on a county basis, on a per capita basis, it isn't the case that rural counties in Wisconsin, according to 2010 dollars anyway, were getting less than people living in more urban counties.
Per person.
Right. And that's with respect to state and federal tax money. But then when you look at our levels of poverty in the state and unemployment, median household income, our rural counties fare less well on each of those things. So it depends how you ask the question. I mean, are we expecting people to know, you know, look at those graphs and know those relationships? No. I mean, people know when their local economy is hard hit.
And then let's talk about the attention side. And this is something you focus on a lot, and respect, too. There is something there, isn't there, that the media is more and more urban-based, coastal-based on the national level, and maybe these really are overlooked communities.
Yeah. I mean, I can just talk about my experience in the past month briefly.
Yeah, go for it.
So, you know, I, like many people, did not expect my book to be as very relevant to the outcome of the presidential election as it ended up being. And so almost immediately, even on election night, I've just had a stream of contacts from a lot of coastal media, national media, or local media outlets in other places in the country. And I've really been struck by how much, my apologies to people in the coastal media, how the lack of understanding they have of just Wisconsin in general, small town Wisconsin in particular. And it's little things like reminding, you know, having to remind people that I'm on Central Time and not East Coast Time. Mm-hmm. And that's just a real, like, glaring indicator to me of how focused on the East Coast a lot of people in the coastal media are.
Do we replicate that here in Wisconsin with maybe a Madison and Milwaukee on the one hand and the rest of the state and too much attention? Maybe guilty of that here at Wisconsin Public Radio. I don't know. Do you see Do you see that similar thing where maybe we're taking a lot of things for granted?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I'm reluctant to say so without doing a really significant content analysis, right?
Is that the feeling out
there? It's definitely the feeling out there. And if you just look at where, you know, where the media markets are, even if we draw circles around where the daily newspapers are, right, there are places in the state that are outside of those areas, right, or especially along the western edge of the state, in which you might be in a metro media market, but actually you're in the Twin Cities media market, right? And you're not getting Wisconsin news, and that news, if you're not even getting Wisconsin state news, certainly the news isn't paying attention to your community.
Talking to Kathy Kramer from UW-Madison, author of The Politics of Resentment, about the urban-rural divide in the United States, in Wisconsin, how it played out in the 2016 elections last month. Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Jake is with us in Milwaukee. Jake, hi.
Hi. Yeah, the Trump campaign really heavily used a lot on the Walker and Republican campaign in Wisconsin by using division tactics, be it race or business or you know, unions or anything that you want to use like that to divide rural disaffected people from urban.
Breaking up there, Jake, but I think we get the gist. This was a tactic, he says, by Republicans, and something you've talked about from Democrats, people on the left, saying, in effect, rural white working class voters were hoodwinked, kind of conned into operating against their own interests. Can you talk about what you see?
Well, what I hear is that those divisions are definitely a part of these perceptions, right? I mean, divisions of race and class, sexual orientation, I mean, those things come into these conversations. But to say that people were tricked into voting for Donald, and I'm not sure the caller was saying that, but to say, to make that argument that Trump used tactics that distracted people from their actual concerns into these divisions isn't accurate. I think the more accurate story from what I've heard is that those divisions are wound into these perceptions of injustice. So when people are talking about all the resources going to the cities, certainly there is race in that perception, but it is many things going on together. People's sense of who's working hard, people's sense that, you know, public employees, urban elites are making decisions not in their interests, all that. It's all a part of the mix. But yeah, was there a drawing attention to divisions in order for electoral gain? Yes, it's a common, you know, and very effective political strategy.
Let's talk about the idea of a small town or rural way of life. A lot of people embrace that, love it. They maybe grew up with it. Maybe they moved into it. It's a desirable way of life for a lot of people.
For sure.
The economy is changing, and a lot of the things that supported that, the one small town factory or the family farm that is no longer big enough to sustain a family, or automation driving people out of business at a warehouse or whatever. Is this part of the basic problem here, that people are looking at the way of life that they love and not seeing a way for it to be economically viable in the future?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of our smaller communities are really struggling. What is our future? How are we going to generate jobs here so that we can have the way of life that we want to, right? And have a stable, like, rewarding means of supporting ourselves and our families. It is a real struggle. And then the flip side question to that is, well, then maybe people just need to move to the cities, right? Maybe people need to recognize that we're becoming more urban society and that's where the jobs are. Well, like you say, people love their communities. They identify strongly with them. They've been there for generations in some cases, and that's asking a lot for people to just pick up and go.
And is that part of the lack of attention that people are talking about, lack of respect, that they don't see anybody maybe in either party hearing that and trying to do something about it?
Yeah, I think the sense that I get from folks is people may talk at us. I'm talking from the perspective of someone in a small community. Mm-hmm. People may come here.
You spend a lot. Yeah. This is your research. You are talking to people over coffee.
Right. I mean, yeah, we're just spending time together. And they're giving me the sense that, you know, people may come here. They may pass through. They may say that they're speaking to our concerns, but they're not actually listening. They're not actually just sitting down with us and saying, what do you think? As opposed to coming to us with some plan that they think is going to address, for example, our local economic needs. Like, people are feeling like misunderstood, not paid attention to, just fundamentally not listened to.
We're talking to Kathy Kramer from UW-Madison. She's the author of The Politics of Resentment. We're looking at the rural-urban divide in Wisconsin politics and American politics and how it played out in the elections. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234.
If you're in a rural or a small town part of the state, do you feel overlooked by the government and the media? Do you feel that there is this gap in understanding that maybe people just don't listen to rural concerns? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation about politics and the urban-rural divide in Wisconsin. Political scientist Kathy Kramer is with us in studio. She's from UW-Madison, and she's the author of The Politics of Resentment.
You can join us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Are you on the rural side of things here in Wisconsin? Do you feel like the media, the government, policymakers aren't paying attention to you, the things that are important to you, what you need in your community? What could bring people together in Wisconsin? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers with Mike in Rusk County. Mike, hi.
Hi. You know, I have a unique perspective on this because I split my time between the urban area of Racine and Rusk County, which is in northwestern Wisconsin. I think the biggest thing is the resentment here, I think, comes from the visibility that appears to be given to urban problems over the visibility of the rural problems. So, for example, if you have a Black Lives Matter march or something like that, then, you know, it'll be splashed on the news, both state and national news. It gets a lot of coverage. But when you look at a lot of the problems that the people up here in northwestern Wisconsin have in the more rural areas, you know, they have just as much poverty. Their poverty rates are not that much lower than the inner city. Their, the jobless rates, et cetera, are not that much lower than they are in the urban city. And you don't have the visibility that, say, FDR had when he pushed through his programs. You know, when you had rural electrification, you saw the lineman out on your pole stringing electricity to your farmhouse. We don't have broadband up here in a lot of these rural areas. You promised it all the time, never shows up. It's these kinds of things that have a very visible impact and get promoted by government when they are doing a good thing for the rural folks. If you don't have that, you know, the only thing that's left to them is, you know, what they see on TV, and their only conclusion that they can come to is, well, they're not helping us anyway, so I'm going to be more concerned about some of these other sidebar issues, such as reproduction rights, or I'm going to be concerned about gun control, because on the other economic matters, I don't see what you're doing for me.
Mike, thanks a lot for sharing that perspective. Kathy?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Thanks for sharing it. And the broadband issue is a really important one, I think. I mean, I hear that a lot when I'm with folks, that it would help. I hear a widespread perception that having better, faster download speeds in their community would help with both obtaining access to jobs, getting job training, and with their local schools. And that's just one thing I'm picking out of Mike's comment. But yeah, it's good to hear his perspective.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Rachel in Tomahawk. Rachel, hi.
Good afternoon, and thanks for taking my call.
What do you think?
Well, I really feel like, from an educator perspective, the needs of the rural schools are not being listened to currently. The narratives right now coming out of our new Secretary of Education and also out of our state are, we need to privatize education and bring more charters and bring more choice to our students. And that is just not a reality in our rural areas. We don't have choice. The narrative is not around strengthening public education. It is about dismantling it, and I really don't feel like they're listening to what our kids in the rural areas need.
Rachel, thanks for that call. And I'll throw in on top of that, I mean, rural schools in Wisconsin rural districts facing problems, high transportation costs. People talk about consolidating, but then people worry, well, if you take, I mean, the school might be the place where Rotary holds its pancake breakfast. It's the community gathering point. What happens if you lose that school?
Yeah, people, I mean, my sense, okay, this is not, I'm not spending time in every Wisconsin
sure.
community, but, you know, every community that I have spent time in, schools are really important. And in the smaller communities, you're right, like there, it's the sense of identity for folks. I mean, people have said to me point blank, when our school goes, we're definitely done as a community, you know. And that's a really important concern to hear, that people working in rural school districts or having kids in rural school districts feel like their concerns aren't being paid attention to. I think there's, you know, a lot you can learn from actually asking people, what do you think the fixes are in your school district?
Rachel, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Kathy Kramer about the urban-rural divide in Wisconsin, politics of resentment, rural areas feeling like forgotten parts of Wisconsin, forgotten parts of the country. We'll go next to Grace in New Glarus. Grace, hi.
Hi. One of the things I would like to correct, one perception you have, Ron, that small family farms are not profitable enough to take care of a family. There are actually studies that have come out of several universities, including now the University of Wisconsin, that shows when you try to get one of these bigger and bigger farms, let's go to 100 cows, let's go to 250 cows, and so on, those are actually less profitable than keeping the number of cows to a manageable number for a family, for a small dairy. So, you know, there's one bias that small family farms are not profitable. They are. We don't get what we need in terms of emergency services, in terms of road maintenance. Farmland values are very, very high, $10,000 to $20,000 an acre in this area, but the taxes are not commensurate. We have bridges that are going to collapse if they're not fixed. We don't have the money to fix them. With factory farms coming in and they're taking 25 trucks a day, big trucks, in and out for feed, for manure, which is getting spread on land and poisoning our water supply and destroying the health of the soil, they don't pay use fees for the roads. They're damaging the roads severely. There are all sorts of things where the rural communities are, I could come up with all sorts of expressions that I shouldn't say on the radio.
Well, Grace, I think we take your point, though. A lot of infrastructure needs, she says, going unmet in a lot of rural Wisconsin, Kathy.
And it's so great to hear that, right? I mean, all the different things she listed off. A lot of these are issues we just don't hear about commonly from most media. So thank you, public radio. No, they didn't pay me to say that. I mean, just it's really helpful to be able to hear what, you know, life in New Glarus, what are the big concerns? And to hear a counter to the myth that a family farm is no longer viable, right? It's good to hear.
Thanks so much for that call, Grace. Kathy, I wanted to bring up, you're an academic, you're researching this stuff, you're talking to people. This is personal for you too, though. You're from Wisconsin. What do you think when you see this kind of division? Because you could see this as a strength for the state, right? You want to live in a city? We got cities. University town, got them. Farm, great. Small town, lakes, lots of them, two big ones. This could be a strength, but it's a factor of division in our state.
Yeah, it is personal for me. I mean, I love this place. And, you know, I'm hearing, when I'm doing my field work, I'm hearing criticism about the cities from people that I have, like, grown to really admire and care about, you know? And so it's really unfortunate, and it is not, I was so shocked when I first heard this stuff in 2007, right? It's not the Wisconsin that I know or that I thought that I knew. And I think that's true of many of us. And I think what gives me hope is that I don't find anywhere that it's the Wisconsin people want, right? And people want to live in a state in which people are good to one another.
So we're living in our city bubbles, our rural bubbles, our suburban bubbles, whatever. Are you seeing any sense that somebody wants to convene and bring people together, get them together and talk and find out what we have in common?
Oh my gosh. Yes, all the time. So, you know, some more formal groups. But honestly, the flow of communication I received, email, Facebook, surface mail, phone calls from people, you know, Wisconsinites, people in other parts of the country, too, just wanting to know how they might have a conversation, how we might fix it, how we might come together. And, you know, I don't have the answers, but I am certainly searching for them like many other people are.
You're hearing people in cities and in rural areas. You've heard about the division. It surprised you. Are you hearing hopeful signs? Are you hearing a desire for people to not have Wisconsin be that way, that divided state?
I am and I'm not, you know. So there are some people who are looking for some really creative solutions using art or just music or conversation or meditation, ways of bringing people together. And at the same time, I am hearing people saying, are you kidding me? You want me to spend more time listening to white folks in rural Wisconsin? That's the solution? And so that's not a hopeful sign to me. I mean, I understand that sentiment where right now for a lot of folks, the last thing they want to do is listen to people from a different political perspective or for people who voted for an opposing political candidate. But yes, at the same time, there are hopeful signs of people willing to try something kind of creative and unusual to try to bring us together.
We'll leave it there for now, but this won't be the end of the conversation, I'm sure, Kathy. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Kathy Kramer. She's director of the Morgridge Center for Public Service, professor of political science at UW-Madison. She's the author of the book, The Politics of Resentment. A lot of people called and didn't have time to get you all on the air, but you can keep sharing your thoughts, your perspectives, and your stories on the Central Time Facebook page. And I'd definitely like to hear stories. Have you tried to reach across political boundaries, geographical boundaries in Wisconsin to try to find things that we have in common, that we can unite around? Again, post your thoughts and your stories on the Central Time Facebook page.